We'll now turn to the first case on the docket today. That's the United States v. Ramos. Are the parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, judges of the court. May it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Jason Roberts, and I represent the appellant, Petty Officer Ernest Ramos.
Could you speak up just a little bit so we catch all this on the microphone, please?
Yes, Your Honor. With the court's permission, I respectfully request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. Before Petty Officer Ernest Ramos told Coast Guard investigative service agents that he was not involved in his wife's marijuana business, the agents should have advised him of his rights under Article 31 Bravo of the Code. They did not advise him, and this prejudiced Petty Officer Ramos when the unwarned statement that he was not involved in his wife's business was the basis for a charge and specification of making a false official statement to the investigators. Counsel for the Appellate Government Division agrees with our prejudice analysis, so barring any questions from your honors, I'd like to focus my argument on the first issue of whether Petty Officer Ramos was entitled to an advisement. There are two issues to answer that question. The first issue is, when did the suspicion arise? And two, when were the agents conducting a law enforcement inquiry during this interview?
Well, counsel, we're concerned here not with the dope, but with false official statement, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. This guy comes in and tells his chain of command that his wife's being threatened by her business partner, with whom she's involved in a allegedly legal under state law, dope business. It's one thing for, it seems to me, for the suspicion of dope to start seeping into their minds. It's quite another thing for the suspicion of false official statement to start seeping into their minds. So how do we deal with that?
Well, Your Honor, the suspicion of criminal activity arose during the interview when Petty Officer Ramos had explained to the members what an I-502 was. He had been using the term I-502 to describe the business,
right,
and the special agent didn't know what that term was, so he asked him, what is that?
Yeah.
At that point in time, Petty Officer Ramos said, well, that's the Washington's form or statute to describe the licensed marijuana operation. At that point, any further questioning should have followed or should have been preceded with a rights advisement. The question that followed after Petty Officer Ramos explained what this business was, the question that followed was, who else is involved in the business? And that question was, while perhaps may not have been designed to elicit an incriminating response, that question reasonably was likely to elicit an incriminating response. And that's the standard for determining whether a law enforcement inquiry was being conducted.
Well, he comes and says, I need protection. And they all kind of scurry around and say, we got a troop in trouble, we got a troop in trouble. And, you know, at some point, obviously, at least the dope suspicion arose, because they hauled in the business partner, and he ended up testifying. But it's a little unclear to me how all that affects the false official statement, which is what we're talking about today.
Well, Petty Officer Ramos did not need to be advised that he had made a false official statement.
No. I mean, what was the focus of the chain of command? Was it protecting Ramos and, by extension, Ramos's wife? Or was it chasing down some nefarious activity?
The focus of the chain of command, Your Honor, was more than likely the safety of Petty Officer Ramos.
Okay, so how does that give rise to a 31B advisement?
Because when Petty Officer Ramos was explaining his situation to his chain of command at three different levels, at each time, he had told those officers that this involved his wife's marijuana business operation. His executive officer even asked him, do you have any marijuana that I need to be aware of? Petty Officer Ramos had said no. But that information about this involves his wife's business partner in a marijuana growing operation was then passed on to CGIS from the executive officer to one of the agents who had interviewed Petty Officer Ramos. Interestingly, the agent who received that information then contacted Special Agent Stinson, who had a very extensive history and experience with counter-drug operations.
Who didn't know what I-502 was.
But he did not know what an I-502
well,
was.
Well, hello?
But he did know, by virtue of being living in Washington, in Seattle, that the state had passed this recreational marijuana law.
Oh, okay. You just didn't know what it was called.
That's correct, Your Honor. So at the outset of the interview, while Special Agent Chavez did not testify at the Article 31B hearing, Special Agent Stinson did, as did the executive officer, and the executive officer testified that he did tell Special Agent Chavez about that this involved the marijuana business. So that knowledge should be imputed to both the agents that this did in fact involve a marijuana business operation at the outset of the interview.
Lieutenant Roberts, is your position that the statement is incriminating because it's not false, or incriminating because it's false?
Well, Your Honor, the statement, "I'm not involved in the marijuana business operation," on its face, would not appear to be incriminating. However, at trial, that statement could have been used to indicate perhaps consciousness of guilt. Maybe not that statement particularly, but all the information that was provided thereafter in terms of the knowledge that he had of the business would all indicate that somebody who knew all this stuff would be involved in a marijuana business operation.
Right, but Article 31, I thought, was designed to protect the accused or the service member from making incriminating statements.
It absolutely is, Your Honor.
So does Article 31B protect service members from lying to investigators? I mean, isn't that what the government charged him with? They charged him with lying to the investigators.
But it doesn't protect him from lying to investigators. But what it does protect is that if he had made a statement that should have been preceded by a rights advisement, and that statement was false, that statement can't form the basis of a false official statement charge and specification. That's consistent with Article 31D, with MRE 304, and this court's longstanding precedent.
Counsel, let's move on a little bit. The government argues that the three cases that this court's decided, Moses, Lucas, and Vail, all appear to stand for the principle that if there is an operational reason involved during the time when normally Article 31 rights would be given, they need not be given at that time. And here, as has been brought out in the earlier questions, obviously the Coast Guard criminal investigators were responding to a threat of violence against one of their members and possibly against the Coast Guard. And so they were involved with that. I mean, to what degree, we really don't know. So why don't those cases answer the question here?
Yes, Your Honor. I think those cases are all distinguishable in two significant areas. Moses, Lucas, and maybe Vail to a lesser extent, but certainly Moses and Lucas were in a real-time situation, not in an interview setting, where this case here was in the CGIS interview room. And that's squarely in line with the facts in Cohen, where the wing inspector general had conducted his interview of the airmen in an office, in a setting, in a controlled setting, even though that inspector general was arguably conducting an administrative function. The court found that he also was implicating his law enforcement responsibilities. Lucas and Moses, those were reactive situations in a non-interview setting with clear impact to the safety of others. This case involves a threat that was made perhaps 24 hours earlier than when Petty Officer Ramos came to CGIS's office to explain everything. So the immediacy, the the facts that are right in front of the interviewers are different. With Vail, Vail, I believe, involved ongoing criminal conduct, which the police officer at the time was allowed to put a stop to and to request the stolen merchandise that had been taken. So those facts are not on point with the facts in this case. In fact, Cohen would control in this case.
It's most fair to say that in this case the investigators had mixed purposes?
Absolutely, Your Honor. This is definitely a mixed purpose case. And where the military judge erred is finding that the investigators had no law enforcement function. Instead, applied a primary purpose test. And this court has not decided that primary considerations are what should be weighed when determining whether 31 Bravo rights should be advised. Rather, it's a question of were law enforcement responsibilities and duties that are imposed or given to these individuals by policy or law, whether those were implicated when the interview was conducted. The appellate government cites, in fact, I cite the case, but not for this purpose, an Army Court of Criminal Appeals case, United States versus Gaetan Batt, where a legal assistance attorney was interviewing a individual for fraud or forgery. And that court had said that there was a primary purpose for conducting an interview on the behalf of his client, and so there was no Article 31B wasn't implicated in that case, primarily because there was a first lieutenant interviewing a captain, so the subtle pressures of military society didn't apply. But also that the statements that followed from that interview, where arguably it became a law enforcement inquiry, were never admitted at trial. So even Gaetan Batt is not contrary to this court's precedent that whether a law enforcement inquiry is implicated alongside other primary responsibilities, that if that law enforcement inquiry exists, rights are required.
Counsel, on those cases, though, weren't the investigators directing their questions to the accused about conduct the accused had engaged in, as opposed to here, where they're asking questions related to a situation that, in this case, the accused has come to them about, this threat situation? In other words, the questions don't appear to be directed at the appellant in this case about misconduct he might be suspected of. Is that a difference, or is that just a difference without a distinction, from your view? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yes, Your Honor. While the agents while the agent's questions may not have been directed towards any misconduct that the accused committed, the questions were still, as the military judge found, they still continued to ask him questions about the business. And those questions about the business, under a total evaluation of the facts and circumstances.
Well, don't they have the right, if the accused comes in and says, hey, my wife and I are being threatened, don't the investigators have a right to determine what the situation is?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in fact, Petty Officer Ramos provided the agents all the information that they needed to investigate the threat. The military judge found early on that Petty Officer Ramos had identified the source of the threat. He stated what the threat specifically was, and he even provided some context about the threat, that this involved his wife's business partner over a business dispute in which she had withdrawn because they had provided a substantial amount of money in furtherance of the business. The CGIS agent had testified that he could, in fact, have continued his investigation into the threat without further questioning of Petty Officer Ramos. And given the fact that this particular agent who was conducting most of the questioning was a experienced counter-drug agent who was, in fact, on a counter-drug task force at the time of the interview, strongly suggests that as is the purpose of CGIS, when they interview service members who they suspect to have committed a crime, if they can get an admission that, in fact, he's involved in this business, then that's what they'd like to get.
Counsel, based on that, what are we to make of the fact that during this questioning, the CGIS agents didn't seem in any way to be exploiting any incriminating statements that might have been made by appellant during that time? In fact, it seems as if they viewed that as being incidental. And then the record seems to reflect that they were huddling to determine, okay, the force protection part of this is over. Now what are we going to do about giving him his 31B rights and then asking anything that is incriminating? What are we to make of that?
Well, Your Honor, for the prejudice that I've alleged, any incriminating statements that involved either possessing marijuana or being involved in the conspiracy, the damage is basically done. All of that actually took place before the suspicion arose and before the agent asked who else was involved in the business. The prejudice that I've alleged is just that the false official statement cannot be he should not stand convicted of the false official statement because the statement that he made, which was used as the false official statement, was made without a rights warning that should have been provided.
At what point in the interview did the appellant use the terms "our" and "we" in referring to the business? Was that right off the bat? Was that almost to the end? Where was that?
It appears, Your Honor, based on a review of the agent's notes, which are an appellate exhibit attached to the record, there's two sets of agent notes that appear to be chronological. They seem to line up going down the page. And both of those terms, those use of those pronouns, are used before Petty Officer Ramos had explained what an I-502 was. So it appears from the record, and I believe the military judge also had found, that he had been describing this business as "we" and "ours," had not yet described the nature of the business, but he had said that the business they had thought it was going to be profitable, but one of the issues that they were facing was that the banks in the Washington area were going to be leery of accepting drug money. Again, though, that comment had preceded him saying that "I'm not involved in the business," where his comment that "I'm not involved in the business, it's my wife's business," and the agents had said, Petty Officer Ramos had then stated he did not want to talk about the business. When that statement was made, strongly, based on the record, it strongly seems to follow from when Special Agent Stinson had asked Petty Officer Ramos who else is involved.
Now, just clarify one thing for me before you run out of time. It seemed to me there was differences in the record as to when the investigators knew that the business was a marijuana business. There's some evidence that indicates they knew before they walked into the interview, and there is other evidence, you know, as to what kind of a business was this. As far as the Washington law was concerned, they didn't know until later. Is there a definitive answer for that in the record?
Your Honor, I'm out of time.
Please respond.
I believe there is a definitive answer in the record, Your Honor. The military judge had said, had asked the agent, and the agent had in fact said that when he explained what an I-502 was, that raised suspicion for me. But I do believe that based on Special Agent Stinson's testimony at trial, that he did say, I knew at the outset that this involved a marijuana business, and that raised a suspicion for me. I'd like to actually then proceed with my argument in rebuttal on that point.
Okay, that is fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have additional time later. We'll now hear from the government.
Good morning, and may it please the Court, I am Lieutenant Cheryl Pels, and I represent the United States. The appellant is not entitled to relief in this case because the military judge did not abuse his discretion denying the defense motion to suppress statements made to the CGIS agents. That is because the questioning in this case was for force protection and not for a law enforcement or disciplinary purpose.
Counsel, what do we do about the statement in the military judge's findings of fact, or his ruling on the motion, where he says, well, the CGIS agent testified he did at some point early on begin to suspect BM1 Ramos of a violation of the UCMJ. His primary focus remained identifying the threat. Where in our case law do we have a primary purpose exception to Article 31B?
Your Honor, there is not a specific primary purpose exclusion to Article 31B.
You understand my question, which is if he had both motives, he had an investigative motive and he had a force protection motive, where does that leave us?
Your Honor, that finding of fact by the military judge does not show that there was a mixed purpose in this case. Although he was a suspect, and that was evidenced by the special agent's own testimony, this entire questioning was only for force protection. That finding of fact by the military judge only shows that he was, in fact, a suspect, which he had a separate finding of fact about as well.
But if someone is a suspect and the person that's asking them questions is by virtue of their job, an investigator, what do you do with that?
Your Honor, this case presents a very unique set of facts, and that is exactly why this court looks at whether Article 31 Bravo rights are triggered by looking at the very facts and circumstances in this case. Again, this is a very unique situation where this member self-reported this threat to his command and to CGIS, seeking the very force protection services that CGIS provides. Although a member being questioned by CGIS, yes, that might typically be in a criminal setting, this was not the case here because the appellant was seeking these force protection services as what he saw to a threat against his life. Questioning by an official to a suspect has been understood by this court in the cases that the military judge cited to in this case in Vail, Lucas, and Moses. In all those cases, it is clear that the person being questioned was in fact a suspect. In Lucas, the member was having hallucinations. It appeared that he was on drugs. He was in fact a suspect, suspected of being on drugs. In that case, and again in Moses and Vail as well, this court found that there was a questioning of a suspect that was for an operational purpose, and thus Article 31 Bravo was not triggered.
Now the questioning...
Go ahead.
The questioning from the record, it reflects that the questioning went on for up to 45 minutes. Why wouldn't it be appropriate under those situations to have the CGIS agents ask, is anyone at imminent threat of harm? And then, from there, since they've identified up front that they realized that there might have been a criminal offense that had been committed by this appellant, then read him his rights once he said, no imminent threat.
Your Honor, there was an imminent threat in this case, and it was unclear. Appellant was unclear to the CGIS agents about exactly what that threat was. The appellant told his command and the CGIS agents that he said, I'm going to get my money one way or the other, and I will see you at work tomorrow. That is exactly the circumstance that we are in the next day where this person, this potentially dangerous person, could be headed to the base to commit some act of violence.
So why shouldn't we put the government to the choice? The choice being focus on force protection and not read the rights? And then if someone makes an incriminating statement, the government can't use it at trial if you haven't read the person's rights.
Your Honor, the government submits that the appropriate test is to judge only the facts and circumstances of this case and to not impose a blanket rule. For example, if somebody went to CGIS with a hoax, made up something completely false in that case, that would be a reason we would want for good order and discipline to be able to prosecute those false official statements to an investigative service.
Counsel, I'm just going back to what the military judge said. He seemed to focus on the fact that the agent specifically didn't ask questions designed to elicit an incriminating inculpatory statement. But then he goes on to say, rather, the gravamen of the evidence is that BM1 Ramos was readily volunteering information about the marijuana business. Isn't that one of the things Article 31 is supposed to guard against, is to let people know anything that you say can be used against you so that they make a choice about whether to talk or not? I mean, the military judge seems to have believed that it only mattered if they asked questions to elicit an incriminating statement.
Your Honor, Article 31 Bravo does protect against Article 31 protects against compulsory self-incrimination. In this case, the record reflects that the CJIS agents were focusing the appellant on what was the threat. The business had to do with what the threat was, and appellant said so during the interview. The fact that he continued to provide additional information about the business, continued to say we and ours when addressing in this conversation with the CJIS agents, does not change the fact that the agents were focused on assessing a threat and determining what it was. We have records that even throughout, even at the end of the interview, the appellant was still unable to clearly say that there what exactly this Mr. Hart was threatening to do, if he was coming to the command to talk to them or if he was coming to do for a violent purpose. These were all the facts and circumstances that the CGIS agents needed this interview to determine.
Well, you've got the appellant here basically sitting there and blabbing to a couple of agents who are busily taking it all down. And doesn't at some point this thing shift gears? You know, from here's low, it's force protection. Here's second, it's dope. Here's third, it's dope. Okay, well, so what's going on here? I mean, you're saying that they're just ambling along there verbally, concerned with nothing but force protection. And then they go out and grab Mr. Hart, who ends up testifying against the accused. Hello? What's going on here?
Your Honor, as you noted before, there is some conflicting testimony about when the CJIS agents did realize that this was a marijuana business in this case. And
you had your terribly experienced agent who didn't know what it was, but as soon as he was apprised of what it was, presumably he knew what it was, since he was a terribly experienced agent.
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, that agent said at the 39A session on this motion that marijuana was in fact a red flag. However, the purpose of this interview remained throughout this 45-minute time period being focused on force protection. It was not until after they had taken a break from the interview, left the interview room, that they received the independent phone call from Cameron Hart. Court looks to the facts and circumstances at the time of the
interview. Well, but wouldn't the independent phone call go to force protection, not to, I mean, where are we here? I don't know. He's supposedly the bad guy here.
Yes, Your Honor, and when Cameron Hart called the CGIS office, he said, I have a Coast Guard member to report who has marijuana in his residence. At that point, Your Honor, and given that they had taken a break at this time and determined that this was not an imminent threat, at this time, when he received the phone call from Cameron Hart, it can be assumed that this, at that point, turned into a criminal investigation.
Okay, and they still didn't read him his rights, right?
Your Honor, they did not read him his rights because they did not ask any further questions of the appellant in this case after they received the phone call from Cameron Hart.
Also, I want to go back to the military judge's findings again. And as Judge Ryan indicated, the military judge made a finding of fact that not long into the interview, the agents suspected Ramos of violating the UCMJ for his involvement with marijuana. And the evidence that was used against him, the evidence that he wanted suppressed for failure to read him his Article 31 rights, was the fact that he denied involvement in his wife's business. And so it seems to me that that's pretty directly related to what they suspected him of. And he said, no, I'm not involved in it at all. Later on, the evidence came out. That's the false official statement. Why isn't that directly related?
Your Honor, at the time of the interview, there was, as the military judge found, there was no questions about where the marijuana was located, what exactly was appellant's role in the business. The only incriminating statements that came out in that interview were the fact
But the bottom line is the military judge found they suspected him of involvement in marijuana, and that's illegal under federal law. And the charge that he moved to be suppressed for being in violation of Article 31 was his involvement. So to me, that seems to be a pretty direct line there. I know there were some questions earlier that indicate it may not be directly connected, but I'm just interested in the government's view on that, the connection between the two.
Your Honor, again, in Jones, this is a four-part test, and the fact that the member was a suspect and that the questioning was about those offenses of which he was suspected are two of those prongs. However, this is still not an interrogation that would trigger Article 31 Bravo rights advisements. And again, that goes back to Moses, Lucas, and Vail. In all of those cases, there was questioning about the offense that the person was suspected of committing. In Vail, we have the person mid-robbery of weapons, and the officer in that case is questioning him about where are the weapons, where are the other weapons.
Well, can you distinguish the case? You know, the appellant's position is that these are all operational cases. You're in the middle of an airplane. You're doing this. You're doing that. It's not the same situation as this where you're really interrogating the guy. What is the government's position on how these cases stand?
Your Honor, the government maintains that there is an immediacy aspect here that made this for operational purposes. While, yes, it might be different than a mid-flight, mid-arrest, or mid-hostage situation, there is still immediacy here in that this threat is unknown. At this point, the CGIS agents know that somebody who is involved in the drug trade, who has potentially killed somebody before, is coming to base, said, I will see you at work tomorrow. And that is exactly the situation that we're in when they are trying to figure out what this threat is. That is all relevant, again, questions, his involvement in the business, questions about the business itself, why would this man be coming after appellant if this is solely his wife's business? Those were all questions that were necessary to understand what this threat was.
A potentially incriminating statement there or question there. What was his involvement in the business?
Your Honor, he did not specifically ask what was his involvement in the business, but what was the nature of the business? Why is he coming after you? And questions to that sort, all relevant to determining what is this threat that the special agent testified was very unclear throughout the interview.
The record reflects that the agents, in response to this threat, notified the gate that this individual about the situation and that they should be on the lookout for that individual. Was anything else ever done?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, it was a member of the appellant's command who notified the gate agent at the base that to be on the lookout for this member. There's nothing in the record to indicate that any of the CGIS agents did that, and that is because at the end of this 45-minute interview, they determined that this was not, in fact, an immediate threat. And then, as luck would have it, when they stepped out to take this break about ending the interview, that is when they received the phone call from Cameron Hart.
Would you agree this is a mixed case, that there are elements of both law enforcement and operational?
No, Your Honor, not in this case. Appellant cites to United States versus Cohen for its mixed purpose reasoning. In that case, this court saw that the questioner, the IG in that case, went beyond what was required in his administrative role. And in this case, we have testimony that falls very short of going beyond what was required in this role.
Well, basically, Cohen held that just because the IG had criminal responsibilities, that once they got into this area, there was a mixed purpose.
Yes, Your Honor, and those circumstances are still different than this case, where the CGIS agent testified to the fact that the agents were focusing the person, the appellant in this case, in on what exactly was the threat, what needed to be done to identify and mitigate this threat. Then later, a criminal investigation.
And all this time, he's rattling on about the drug business and his non-involvement in it.
Yes, Your Honor. However, those statements, the we and ours, is not enough to show a mixed purpose. In fact, if this were a criminal investigation, the biggest question would likely be, where is the marijuana? And the military judge made a finding of fact that there were no specific questions about where the marijuana was located or what exactly was appellant's role in this business.
Counsel, could I turn your attention to prejudice for a moment, please? Let's assume for the moment that this court were to decide that there was an abuse of discretion error. How should we approach the issue of prejudice here?
Your Honor, the government concedes that the Article 107 conviction could not stand if this court finds that there was an abuse of discretion, and that's under United States versus Swift.
So should we then return this to the CCA?
No, Your Honor. In this case, this court can dismiss that finding without ordering either a sentence rehearing.
Why should we do that? We could do that, but why should we do that?
Your Honor, in this case, there need not be a sentence rehearing due to the severity of the remaining offenses. There was no change in the landscape here. The appellant was at a special court-martial, which capped the offenses, which capped the sentence in this case, and even still, the appellant received a relatively light case. This is a case about a conspiracy and a business to manufacture drugs, and even with removing the Article 107 conviction, if this court were to find that there was an abuse of discretion, the sentence, only confinement for 90 days, reduction to E3 and a BCD, is wholly supported by the remaining Article 81 and 112 alpha convictions.
And isn't that a CCA determination rather than something that we should pay attention to? I mean, that their job is sentence reassessment. It's not our job.
Your Honor, in United States versus Swift, this court found prejudice to only the appellant's Article 107 false official statement conviction, dismissed one false official statement specification, and did not order a sentence rehearing or sentence reassessment, instead stating that in light of the remaining offenses and the evidence in that case, that that was all that needed to be done.
Counsel, are we to make anything of the fact that the reason that they didn't give him his Article 31B rights is because they were afraid that he wouldn't talk to them? I mean, I'm just looking at Cohen. You know, they talk about different factors to take into account. One of them is whether it was designed to evade the accused's constitutional or codal rights, meaning, like, if we give them these rights, he might quit talking to us. And then the presumption that when someone senior is talking to someone junior, that it's disciplinary.
Yes, Your Honor, that is an important fact here, but the government would liken this situation more to that in Moses, where the NCIS agent in that case also said that the conversation, the dialogue, the questioning that he was suspect, that while he was a suspect, was necessary to bring this hostage situation to a peaceful conclusion. In this case, the CGIS agents had the same responsibility when they were asked by the appellant's command to identify and mitigate this threat, and encouraging open conversation about what this threat was, especially when the appellant was being unclear about whether there was an actual threat in this case, was important to ending the threat assessment.
I mean, it just seems that Cohen seems to say that if someone is acting even in an administrative capacity and they discover information leading them to believe someone is guilty of an offense, that they have to stop the questioning and give them their rights.
Your Honor, that, again, this is not the type of interrogation present in Cohen, because this was not, may I finish my answer? My time has run.
You can finish response to that question.
Again, this is not an interrogation, like in Cohen, that triggers Article 31 Bravo, because this was for an operational, the questioning was for an operational purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appellant is not entitled to relief in this case because the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he considered the facts and circumstances in this case to find that the questioning was pursuant to force protection and not for a law enforcement and disciplinary purpose. If this court finds that a right advisement was necessary, it should find no prejudice to the Article 81 and 112 alpha convictions due to the overwhelming evidence to support those. And even if this court grants relief for the Article 107 conviction, no sentence rehearing is necessary due to the severity of the remaining offenses.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear rebuttal.
Judge Urban, to address your question about when the suspicion arose, at trial, the special agent had testified that at the outset of the interview, he knew this involved marijuana. And for him, that raised a suspicion based on all of his experience. And therefore, we believe that when a law enforcement officer has reasonable suspicion at the outset of a controlled interview, there should be a presumption that the law enforcement officer is, in fact, conducting a law enforcement inquiry. That presumption should be rebuttable, though.
Now, is there any law that says there is such a presumption, or you just think we ought to have such a presumption?
I think it would be consistent with Article 31 Bravo, Your Honor, because of when Article 31 Bravo was created, the military did not have military criminal investigative offices. They had uniformed members serving that role. And so when 31 Bravo was created, it was to address those subtle pressures of military life. The case law, I didn't cite it in my brief, Your Honor, but where the proposal or the rule that the presumption of a law enforcement inquiry applies when a superior in the chain of command is interviewing a member, that's found in Swift. And Swift, I believe, relies on Duga. Duga also says that if the official position of the interviewer carries with it some authority, then the presumption should apply there. Now that the military has created dedicated military criminal investigative offices to conduct law enforcement missions, which is, in fact, the primary purpose by virtue of the fact that all of these organizations have the name criminal investigator in their title, I believe, and I ask this court to also find the presumption in this case. To conclude,
that if a member of a criminal investigative organization opens his mouth, he's got to give rights for what? No, because it's called criminal investigation? I don't know quite what you're saying.
No, Your Honor, not just because of, he would just open his mouth. It would be in certain circumstances. So when it's a controlled interview, in an interview setting where...
Is this a controlled interview since his troop runs in saying, help, help, help?
Well, controlled may be a heavy term, but the facts are that this member was brought to the CGIS interview office.
Oh, you mean you're talking the physical location.
Exactly.
Okay. You may briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. A sentence rehearing should be authorized because all false official statements, if this court were to find that the Article 31B was not properly given, and this court were to find that the false official statement charge should be dismissed, all false official statements, with which there were three, would have been removed from the charge, and that would have changed the weight that the defense's sentencing evidence was when it was presented to the members. Because Petty Officer Ramos came to CGIS perceiving himself to be a victim, as he was seeking help, he also implicated in himself in collateral misconduct. And any other person who was perceiving himself or herself to be a victim would have been advised of his rights, his or her rights, once it became clear that collateral misconduct was involved. The same.
Counsel, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 10:25.
All rise.
Court stands in recess until 10:25.